Hello and a big warm welcome to you and welcome to the Aware Parenting Podcast. My name is Marion Rose, PhD, and we have a little intermission. That's the word I was looking for. We have a little intermission between the food series, which is now finished, and the second sleep series, which is about to start after this episode. So this is a little in-between episode, and the reason I am recording it is because one of my lovely mentees, you know who you are, hello lovely you, asked if I would be willing to record this episode, and I had such a big yes in response. So here it is, and I am so willing for you to find it helpful. So this episode is about the differences between aware parenting and classical attachment parenting. So this might be for you if you have been practicing classical attachment parenting and you've been perhaps hearing about aware parenting and wondering whether it's for you, what the differences are, or perhaps you are practicing aware parenting and you have friends practicing classical attachment parenting and they're asking questions about it perhaps, and you would like to have somewhere to send them to listen to this, or perhaps you're just really interested in understanding the nuances and differences. That might be you if you are wanting to become an aware parenting instructor, for example, and if you are, yay! And a yay to all of those. If you're any of those people, welcome, welcome. Or if you just want to come and listen because you're listening to all the episodes, you're so welcome too. So I wonder if you've heard the term classical attachment parenting. So it's a term that I created many years ago, and I'm so delighted that it's been adopted by Aletha Salter, who is the founder of Aware Parenting. So it is now an official term used in the aware parenting community. And it basically refers to the original attachment parenting paradigm, which was first described by William and Martha Sears. And the aware parenting version of attachment parenting has several key differences from this original version. So if you already are familiar with aware parenting, you know that attachment style parenting is one of the three main aspects. It's the first of the three main aspects. So I wonder how you feel when you hear that. I wonder if that meets your need for reassurance, or you find it reassuring to hear. So first of all, I'd love to talk a little bit about why many parents make that shift from classical attachment parenting to aware parenting. There are a few main reasons that I've observed over the many years of being an aware parenting instructor. So one of the main ones is if the baby or toddler or child is waking up more and more frequently at night, that's can be up to every hour, every 45 minutes. I've worked with parents over the years. And even though in classical attachment parenting, there's a belief that that's biologically normal often, and parents often really celebrated and encouraged to put up with that for a few years, that obviously for some parents, it can be really, really rough being woken up that frequently to not get that really restful sleep. So that's one of the reasons. I do want to preface this. If you are new to my work, as well as aware parenting, I also share something called the Marian Method, which is a form of reparenting and what I call reculturing. And one of the core elements of that work is getting free from what I call the guilt sticks, the shame sticks, the self-judgment sticks, as well as judging and shaming others. So I really want to offer as a preface that what I'm sharing here has absolutely no judgment, no shaming. And I'll be inviting you to put down any guilt sticks that you might be tempted to pick up, that it really is possible to learn new information without picking up those sticks. So the phrase might be something like, I'm not willing to hit myself with that guilt stick, and I am willing to be really compassionate with myself. So that's really important. So I really love to weave that throughout all of this. I have just so much compassion for all parents. We're all doing the absolute most we can. And so much of what I see, again, if you're familiar with my work, is that so much of this is about cultural conditioning. We grow up in a culture. We're meant to imbibe the core beliefs of the culture. And so many of those are related to how we treat children. And often as we get older, and often really there's that invitation when we become parents to more clearly see the core beliefs about human beings, the core cultural thoughts, beliefs that are really deeply affecting the parenting practices. So that's in general the frame that I like to hold, to really look at it from that cultural perspective and to see that, of course, we do what we do. We were taught how to do these things in the culture that we grew up in the family we grew up in. We needed to learn to think in those ways and do those things in order to be loved or belong or be safe. And questioning cultural beliefs is a huge thing. We're really meant to pass down the culture that we grew up in. It's how culture continues. So often we can find it really challenging. Not necessarily. Some people have an experience of like, oh my gosh, this has never really sat with me. It's never really resonated with me. And when I found Aware Parenting, I had a big yes. It was a fit with all that I'd been having a sense of, but perhaps hadn't really been able to articulate it. So many people say that. But that's not the same for everybody. Some people, it's more of a, it can be a big, big process to actually see so many of the things that we were taught were just true and how things were are actually cultural beliefs. And I really love how Aletha Salter, the founder of Aware Parenting, articulates this right from the very beginning, right in her very first book, The Aware Baby. One of my favorite parts of all of her books is that the first few pages of The Aware Baby, where she really articulates this so clearly, that every culture has a set of beliefs that they pass down to the children in order for the children to live in that community. And that really depends, or used to much more depend on the climate, the geographical positioning, like so many factors that really affect how babies and children are treated. But nowadays, as what I call the disconnected domination culture, which is not an Aware Parenting term, it's a Marian Method term, but as this has spread across the world more and more, particularly since the Industrial Revolution and increasing use of technology and so on, that this way of perceiving babies and children and all human beings has really spread and has become a way of perceiving human beings that really is often set away from local climates and local particularities into more of a bigger common theme. And again, it's really set up so that the disconnected domination culture can thrive. So I've gone a little bit off on a tangent here, but not a tangent, because it is one of my favorite topics. And I think it's so important to really see that it's cultural conditioning that so often leads to the way we think about babies and children and the parenting practices that are used, particularly in relation to things like closeness, feeding, crying and sleep, and also what you might call discipline. So how children are responded to when they do things that their parents don't want. So all of those practices are really deeply affected by what we really believe to be the true nature of human beings and what we need in our culture. So really seeing it from that perspective, I think, can also help in terms of getting freer from the guilt sticks and getting freer from also judging other people, because increasingly we see things, and that's my experience, as we see things from this cultural lens, we can see, well, of course, we learnt to do things this way. Of course, we learnt to treat babies in this way. This is a result of that cultural conditioning. So it becomes easier then to really be deeply compassionate with ourselves, because of course we needed to do it this way. Of course we needed to believe that this was the truth about babies. And of course that person over there needed to believe that because they grew up in that family, in that culture. So what I love about aware parenting to me is it really helps us as much as possible differentiate out and parse out, I'm not sure if that's the accurate term, but I like it, you know, what is our biological wisdom as human beings? What do we need in order to be able to thrive physically, emotionally, mentally and spiritually? And where are the cultural beliefs set up to help the culture thrive and for the individual to become a functioning part of that culture, but that aren't actually set up to really support the optimal flourishing of a human being? And where might we change things so that children can grow up to become all that they can be while living within a culture, and possibly and probably to support change so that the culture becomes one that is much more about really understanding the true nature of human beings and what we need and what babies need, what children need, what teens need, what adults need, what elders need, what the plants and the animals need, what our earth needs, you know, really connecting on that level. So that often children growing up in these ways will be part of changing the culture rather than keeping a culture going that actually clearly doesn't seem to be helpful for very many. It's helpful for big corporations and so on, not so helpful for human beings and other beings. So this is so live for me at the moment because I'm editing my sleep book, which I'm totally loving, and I'm talking a lot about this and really just loving it so much. And as I say, really going back to the Aware Baby, those first few pages, this is exactly what Aletha really clearly talks about, this cultural piece and really understanding it. And I think it can really, as I already said, I really think it can help free us up from, again, some of this cultural conditioning around the idea that there's a right and a wrong, the idea of competing against different paradigms or judging other paradigms, to actually see, oh, makes so much sense that there is this particular paradigm. It's set up for really important reasons. It functions well to create a culture where corporations thrive. What might we do to help babies and children really to be deeply understood so that they can become really flourishing, deeply, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually healthy, vibrant human beings who can co-create a culture that actually serves everybody. So, yum. This is clearly very live for me, isn't it? I'm actually going to do a sleep episode. So when I start the sleep series, in the early part of that, I'm also going to talk lots more about this in terms of sleep, because I am really absolutely loving this topic right now. So, yum. Let's return back to that question that I had. Why do people often make the change from classical attachment parenting to aware parenting? So, as I say, one of the main reasons is sleep. So discovering that a baby or a child or a toddler is often waking up more and more often, and that becoming increasingly painful or challenging or stressful for parents who might be feeling exhausted, overwhelmed. And I want to say, if that's you right now, I am sending you so much love and compassion. As I'm going to talk a lot about in the sleep series, one of the things about sleepiness or tiredness is when we're tired, whether we're an adult or a baby or a child or a teen, it is much harder to suppress our feelings. And I'll talk why that is innately wise, what the reason for that is. So for us as parents, because most of us growing up in this DDC, disconnected domination culture, didn't have our, what I call our healing feelings heard. I'm going to talk more about that if you're new to this. So most of us have a lot of suppressed feelings, which can very easily show up when we're tired. And that can make parenting really, really hard. We can start to get more and more reactive as these big feelings come up in relation to our child or children. And we might direct them towards them, even though, of course, they are not the cause. The cause was often decades ago, but those feelings will bubble up in the present. And, of course, just feeling tired on that physical, practical, unmet need in the here and now level is going to be kind of uncomfortable, can't it? We might have sore, dry eyes or just find it hard to be thinking clearly, and you know, all the ways that our body's really trying to signal to us this unmet need. You need more sleep, you need more sleep. Here, beep, 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 beep. Again, our incredibly beautiful, wise bodies are trying to communicate that. Again, that can make life much harder, including parenting. So I'm sending you so much love if you're feeling tired right now. I'm sending you a big hug. I invite you to maybe put your arms around your arms around your arms, give yourself a big hug, or maybe if you've got someone around, an adult around that you can just go and have a big hug with right now. I just want to let you know, I really hear how tired you are, sweetheart. Really hear how exhausted you are. I am sending you so much love. And really the understanding from an aware parenting perspective that we really can have sound sleep. We can sleep as parents after that first, you know, those early months, of course, for a newborn is going to be needing to wake to feed. But as they get older and their stomachs get bigger, that really is possible to really have shifted significantly in the second half of their first year. So it really is possible to have sound sleep and secure attachment. It's really possible to co-sleep for lots of lovely years, as many as you want to, and breastfeed and not be breastfeeding all night long, not having a baby or a toddler or a child who's wiggling around all night or needing to be in one particular position, or, you know, the idea of the toddler who's upside down in the bed and moving all around the bed. We have a really different way of understanding all of that from an aware parenting perspective. So again, that is the title of my next book. I just did a reveal of that. So it's called Sound Sleep and Secure Attachment with Aware Parenting. And it is for parents of babies through to teens, which I'm really delighted about. It has that long-term perspective. And it is the same, the main part of the title is the same as the sleep course I have, which I am going to be doing a live round of very soon. It's April now, end of April. And that course is open all year round as well if you're wanting some aware parenting support with sleep. And also got, I'm very excited, my first children's book is coming out. This has been something I've been wanting to do for nearly two decades, and I'm so excited about it. And the first one is called Calm Down, Bob Before Bed. And that is all about a bear who's rambunctious before bed, and his parents are telling him to calm down, and they do all the things. And anyway, you can imagine, I really love it so much. I was saying the words to my son last night. And I was singing them. I said, calm down, Bob, before bed, Dad said. Calm down, Bob, before bed, Mum said. And then he's into his taiko drumming. So he started drumming in tune with it. And I was just singing it over and over again. So I'm really excited about all of this. And while I'm sharing my excitement, I'm sending love as well, if you like. I thought you were going to be talking about classical attachment parenting. I really will be talking more very soon. But I do want to share one more thing. I do think all of these are relevant. That one of my posts on my Aware Parenting Instagram account a couple of weeks ago, I wrote about, from a child's perspective, what a child who's being rambunctious before bed is really communicating. And it's got, I think, 13,900 likes right now. So I really see that this is becoming much more well known, and there are lots of reasons why, again, from a cultural conditioning perspective, this culture, parents have been taught to calm children down before bed, which doesn't fit with their innate biological wisdom, which I'll be talking about endlessly in the sleep series. So I'm enjoying chatting with you today. Hello. So why else do people make the change from classical attachment parenting to aware parenting? So another really core reason can often be because the mother is becoming resentful about being the only person who can help their baby or child or toddler go to sleep. So we have a really different way of looking at that from an aware parenting perspective. And oh, the sleep series really wants to be here, doesn't it? Wants to be here today. Sleep series, you're coming really soon. Next time, it's your turn really soon. Being resentful about a child who's wanting to seemingly breastfeed all the time, that can show up as well. Mothers really wanting to have a different experience. By the way, if you're new to this podcast, you can probably hear one of the dogs playing in the background. You can probably hear the wild welcome swallows coming in and out. I do this, record this podcast from my kitchen bench, so it's always a bit of noise here, because I like real, I like authentic, and that's why I keep those noises in. So what other reasons can there be? Well, there can be a sense that something might be missing because they're doing all of these things, carrying the baby all the time, co-sleeping all the time, breastfeeding lots, being sensitive and attuned, and yet the baby or the toddler starts to become more and more agitated. They might be avoiding eye contact. They just might not seem very happy. They might start hitting or taking things from other children, just not really seeming to be this calm, relaxed, present baby, toddler, or child that they imagined, given that they are meeting all of those attachment needs. So there's often then that search of like something, it seems like there's something missing. I've heard that so many times from parents, saying, I was doing all these things and I really had the sense that there was something missing, something that I wasn't understanding, because I really see that my baby or toddler or child just didn't look actually happy, and there's something missing, something else here that I'm not seeing. And also, again, with toddlers and older children, there might be a desire to have compassionate ways of understanding, well, why is a child hitting? If we're always doing gentle parenting and we're always responding with compassion, why is a child hitting then, to really understand that? And again, I think that's really shifting in more recent years as more and more the whole fight or freeze response is becoming more and more well known in the mainstream. But still, that is often a thing, and particularly years ago when that really wasn't such the kind of one of the topics of the day, it was very common that people would say, well, why? So many times parents say, well, why? I don't understand. Why is my child hitting? That we're only completely gentle with them. Or the child might be throwing or biting, and parents are perhaps wanting to know how to say no in compassionate ways. And this is all related to crying. So we're going to be talking lots more about that. I'm just going to go and say hello to Feather the Frenchie and see if I can encourage him to stop playing quite so loudly, although I very welcome loud play. I might invite him to go and play loudly somewhere else. I'll be right back. I love how apt it is, hey, that he's playing rambunctiously. Of course he is. He's really communicating that. So what are the differences, you might ask, between classical attachment parenting and aware parenting? Well, to explain more, I'd really love to share with you the three aspects of aware parenting, which if you're familiar with aware parenting already, I'm sure you're really familiar with. So the first, as I said earlier on, is attachment style parenting. So in general, that is the same as classical attachment parenting. Although in aware parenting, there is one extra piece, which is generally seen as part of what is required to support secure attachment. And that is listening to healing feelings. So we'll talk more about that more. So the second aspect is non-punitive discipline. So that includes not using punishments or rewards, not using shame or blame, coercion, all of those things. And how is that possible? Well, it's because in aware parenting, they're really aiming to understand the reasons why children do what they do. And there are generally three reasons for children doing things that we don't want or that we find challenging. And the aim really is to find out which one of those or which ones of those are and tend to things at that root cause so that children then become more, which is their natural state, gentle, cooperative, contributing. Not all the time, of course, because they have their own reasons, their own nose. It doesn't mean they're going to be compliant or obedient. They are going to be more willing to cooperate and contribute. But it's very different from compliance or obedience, which are based on those more power over forms of responding to children. So again, that's relevant here in terms of the differences between aware parenting and classical attachment parenting. And so the third aspect is preventing stress and trauma wherever possible, and understanding how babies and children are deeply affected by what they experience, by stresses and traumas, little traumas and bigger traumas. And this is probably the biggest piece, that babies and children have innate biological wisdom. They have innate, inborn, inbuilt processes to heal from stress and trauma right from birth. And this is the piece that's really often not yet understood in other paradigms. And it's this, because it is such a different understanding of babies and children, it really leads to very different practices and very different outcomes. And I know for me, who when I was pregnant with my daughter, my first child, she's 22 now, so that was 23 years ago, I already had 14 years as a background in developmental psychology and psychotherapy. So I had a PhD from Cambridge University on the mother-infant relationship. During my PhD, I observed mothers and babies interacting on video, slowed right down, like millisecond by millisecond. I trained in infant observation. I was a postdoctoral research fellow looking at infant development. So I was really, that was my background, observing babies and aiming to understand what their capacities and capabilities were, what was happening in the relationships between mothers and babies. And that was particularly in the context of postnatal depression. But I was also looking at mothers and babies where the mother wasn't experiencing that diagnosis and experience. So that was my background. I trained as a psychotherapist for a long time, years and years, 6 years I think it was, and worked as a psychotherapist. I'd been fascinated in really understanding how babies and children are affected by what they experience. I had done loads of workshop. I'd done 10 years of my own weekly therapy. I'd immersed myself in understanding how experiences in utero and birth affect us throughout our lives. So that was really my passion for the previous 14 years. I'd read every book I could lay my hands on, done every course that I could find, you know, really studied both professionally and personally, been completely immersed in this. So it was a very long way of explaining that. But again, I think it's really important to communicate that. So that was 23 years ago. I was pregnant. I was looking for a parenting paradigm that would fit with all of those things. So all the attachment theory that I'd studied and understood, all the theories that I'd learned in my psychotherapy training around attunement and listening to feelings and all the things that babies really need in order to feel deeply understood and heard, and what children need to have their feelings heard, all the things you can probably imagine, plus my academic work and research as well. So I had these three pieces that I was looking for a parenting paradigm to match, and I came across aware parenting on the internet. It did exist back in those days, the olden days, and when I first saw it, I was in awe. I had a big aha, like this is exactly what I had been looking for. And the reason why I tell that long story about my own background is because it was that extra piece. So everything else, I was like, yep, attachment, you know, knew about attachment theory. In fact, where I was doing my PhD, it was called the Winnicott Research Unit. Donald Winnicott was a English paediatrician and psychoanalyst. All of the whole unit was studying postnatal depression, effects on the mother-infant relationship and how that continued throughout life. So in the Winnicott Research Unit, they had a strange situation set up there so they could study attachment status of toddlers, so 18 months onwards, if I'm remembering accurately. And the strange situation was developed by someone called Mary Ainsworth, based on the work of John Bowlby, who developed something called attachment theory. He was the founder of attachment theory, really based on his own work. He was originally a psychoanalyst. He was also influenced by someone called Conrad Lorenz, who was a zoologist and ethologist. Anyway, he did a study, which I remember so much from my psychology degree, on imprinting with young geese. So the first beings that the geese would see once they had hatched, they would imprint on. Those were seen as an attachment figure. So this was originally Bowlby's work. Mary Ainsworth developed this strange situation. And I used to sometimes, when they were needing someone to step in and be the stranger, to run that experiment to see what attachment status the child had, I would play that role, which I really didn't enjoy. Looking back now, particularly because of my own experience as a baby, my own attachment history, being an incubator baby. Anyway, so again, just sharing a kind of bigger picture piece around attachment theory. So there's a difference between attachment theory, which was originally developed by Bowlby and then evolved over the years, and the understanding of attachment status. So, for example, secure attachment being the most helpful and what we're aiming for with aware parenting and classical attachment parenting. And attachment parenting, which is influenced by attachment theory, but is something separate. So that was, as I shared earlier, was developed by William and Martha Sears. So as I said, I found aware parenting, discovered it, and aha, here it was. It had attachment theory. It had this deeper understanding of feelings and welcoming feelings, of attunement, of all of these things that I had studied and immersed myself in for that 14 years. But it had this extra piece. It had this extra piece that I did not know as a psychotherapist and developmental psychologist, because in our culture, it's really not understood. It's still not understood in the majority of psychology departments, psychotherapy trainings, all the places where people are taught about infant and child development. This third piece is still not understood. And that is because of that cultural piece, because all of those trainings are still being influenced by cultural conditioning. And I think this piece is really important to understand, because for each of us, when we're in our culture, when we're in the beliefs from our culture, we tend to see them as the truth. We tend to see this is just the way things are. Wherever we've been brought up, we'll just see, oh, you know, X, Y, and Z, unless or until we question those. Often that's if we maybe see other cultures. So I remember for myself having watched documentaries, for example, of other cultures where children, all the people would often sleep all together in the same place. So children would be up in the evenings playing around when everyone was around the campfire and all of those things. Also growing up in England, I would see more that Mediterranean lifestyle, which was still around then. I imagine that's probably increasingly changing, where children would often, everyone would have siestas at lunchtime, and then in the evenings, children would often be up late with adults around mealtimes. Again, just a different way of understanding things. And I think when we see that there are different ways of doing things and there are different understandings about babies and children, it helps us question, so what I believe to be just the truth, perhaps it's one way of understanding, it's one way of thinking about, it's one set of beliefs. And the biggest question being, does that actually resonate with me? Do these beliefs resonate with me? Actually, would I like to go searching for something that really does resonate? And that was really my journey with, first of all of these different modalities and so on, and then aware parenting. And this was this aha moment of, really? They can actually heal from stress and trauma right from birth. And why that's even more relevant here is because so many of the things that parents find challenging are because of they've been taught in this culture to not understand and recognize this third aspect. The fact that not only are babies and children deeply affected by what they experience, but also they have these inbuilt processes to heal from stress and trauma right from birth. And pretty much every day, most babies and then toddlers and children are trying to utilize these innate healing processes. But because in our culture, we don't understand that, we're not seeing that through a clear lens until we come across aware parenting or hand-in-hand parenting, which has a similar, is similar but different in some ways. We are often, parents are basically taught to work against those innate healing responses, those innate relaxation responses. And it's that which causes so many of the challenges in parenting, as well as not understanding the three reasons for children's behavior, one of which is the same thing. So hence punishments and rewards and all of those things and all the challenges and difficulties that creates. So that's why this third aspect is so pivotal. And I think it's why when people come across aware parenting, they often really focus on that and often forget or don't see as clearly that it is also so deeply based on these other two, the attachment style parenting and the non-punitive discipline. There's so much richness and depth to aware parenting. It's not just that third aspect, which is, of course, also rich and deep. So I'm going to be talking more about what that third piece is, how babies and children do naturally heal from stress and trauma, and why then it helps all of these reasons why people often come from classical attachment parenting to aware parenting. It can help babies sleep restfully and be securely attached. All family members can help the baby, child or toddler go to sleep. The understanding what's going on with breastfeeding all the time can shift everything too. And the sense of there's something missing, there's often this, aha, this is why, this makes so much sense. This is why they were doing that. This is why they're hitting their sibling. This is why they're waking up every hour. This is why they're avoiding eye contact. This is why their bodies are so tense. This is why they just seem really agitated, even though we're doing all these things to meet their needs. It's often this aha moment of, this was the missing piece. And also how to respond, what parents can do to actually help children sleep, babies and children sleep restfully, be naturally calm and gentle, and to be generally willing to cooperate, all of those things. And for deep intimacy between parents and children, and for mothers to get their needs met and not fall into resentment. So there are three important differences between the two approaches. The first is the interpretation of crying. So these come from what I've just shared. So the first is the interpretation of crying. The second is how to respond to challenging behaviours. And the third is the role of the mother. So let's start off with the interpretation of crying. So again, this really comes down to that third element, really, which is preventing stress and trauma wherever possible, and knowing that babies and children have innate capacities to heal from stress and trauma right from birth. And I would, in my experience over the last 10 years or so, there's now the whole trauma-informed movement has meant that so many more parents are understanding this. However, in many paradigms and often in classical attachment parenting, there isn't generally the understanding of this innate capacity to move out of fight, flight, or freeze into homeostasis through either particular forms of laughter and play or through crying and raging with loving support, with loving support being the essential piece here. Crying and raging with us. So for a baby, of course, that means always in arms with a child or toddler, with a deep closeness from us, with deep presence from us. That is how they release stress and trauma from their bodies. Laughter, play and laughter, you know, where parenting, we call that attachment play, based on the book by Aletha Salter of the same name, which I highly, highly recommend if you haven't already got it. And also through crying and raging. So these are innate, it's part of our innate biological wisdom as human beings, which this culture has demonized. So again, if you look at the history of cultural perceptions of tantrums, for example, you know, it was in the Middle Ages, I believe, that tantrums, a child who tantrumed was being seen as being possessed. That's a cultural belief. It got slightly more compassionate, perhaps, let's say, to the idea of misbehavior. So a child having a tantrum would be seen as misbehaving, would be punished or shamed, seen as there's something wrong with them. Think about all the therapist chairs filled up with clients healing from those experiences, that our innate biological wisdom, the beauty of our big feelings that are here to help us heal from stress and trauma, being deeply shamed. So over the years, it has become less and less judged, but still often now we've often gone more into either the idea of almost a little bit of pity, if it's not their fault, it's just that they don't yet know how to be calm. And so there's the idea it's their immature brain development, and that's why they rage or cry. So that's a bit of a sense of poor them. We're superior as adults and poor them, and they'll learn how to be as competent as us with suppressing their feelings. And then there's increasingly a model of something wrong, but in terms of more diagnoses, that children who have tantrums, that there's, again, a sense of something wrong, but not from a kind of bad, evil concept, but more from a sense that there's something wrong with them physiologically. And I also want to include that aware parenting is all about responding to each child as a unique individual. And absolutely, there may be really important reasons, and of course we've talked about this, that in aware parenting we're aiming to first of all to reduce stress and trauma as much as possible. First of all, attachment to meet a baby and child's needs promptly, attentively, in an attuned way as much as possible. So of course that's part of it. So we're not just saying, oh, you know, it's fine, they can have all these stressful things and we'll just listen to their feelings. It's really looking at each individual child. And some children have much more stress and trauma, including in utero, how their birth went, what happened to them after birth, has the parents had stresses in the relationship, you know, all kinds of things. And also there are physiological reasons to why children might be raging, tantruming, crying more. And of course, so again, I really want to say this is not a one size fits all map and model. It's a map to then, with deep nuance, attentiveness, consciousness, awareness, aware parenting. It's about being aware with each unique baby and child and seeing from this map and model, observing them, listening to ourselves, what's happening for this unique child. And there may be things going on physiologically. There's all kinds of things. So I really want to also make that really clear. But if we look at that interpretation of crying, we can really see the cultural beliefs, the effect of the cultural beliefs on what parents are taught is the most helpful way to respond to a child who is crying or raging, what's often still called tantruming. And again, if we were to do a cross-cultural study, we would see different responses, different beliefs about why children are doing that, what's going on for them, and different responses. So from an aware parenting perspective, the belief is that this is their innate wisdom, that Babies and children have really wise bodies. They have innate wisdom. They innately know how to move out of fight, flight, or freeze back into homeostasis through crying and raging or laughter and play with loving support. That is how they release the stress from their bodies. The crying and the raging, the moving of their hands and their legs being the release of that, the energy mobilized to fight or flee. The loud sounds being the energy that was mobilized to call out for help and to perhaps also scare away the scary thing. All of these are releasing stress and tension from their bodies, which if not released, will accumulate and accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. So in this culture, there's two ways often we're taught to perceive crying and to respond to it. So the classical attachment parenting way would be the belief that all crying is an indication of an unmet need. So if a baby or child is crying, the interpretation is they have an unmet need and we need to stop the crying. And if we've stopped the crying, that means the need is met. Whereas from an aware parenting perspective, there are two reasons for crying. One is absolutely to meet needs, and absolutely our aim is to meet those needs promptly. And to know that also babies and children and adults too cry to release stress and trauma from their bodies. It's a way that they literally release it. That cannot happen through talking about things, that whole use your words thing. So really understanding that that's the aware parenting perspective. So as I was saying, in our culture, we would see the classical attachment parenting way would be a baby or child's crying. It means they have an unmet need. We need to stop that crying. And if we've stopped the crying, we've met the need. Whereas in more kind of isolation or separation based paradigms, the belief would often be we need to get children to be independent early. So we might then do something else to stop the crying, but that's less based on connection with our bodies. So from an aware parenting perspective, it is if we think every bit of crying is what I call a needs feeling rather than a healing feeling, then what we're actually doing is supporting babies and children to suppress their feelings. So when they stop crying, those feelings are not going away. Those feelings are still in their bodies. What we're doing them is helping them mildly dissociate from those feelings. So this is where it's so important. Remember I said at the beginning, I don't judge anyone, and I really invite you to be unwilling to pick up those guilt sticks yourself. We're all taught this, coming back to that cultural piece. Of course we believe these things. We're taught these. We grow up with these. We experience them ourselves. We see them in the media. We see it everywhere. They're really, really important to understand this. So if you want to really learn in depth about this, and perhaps you are new to aware parenting, I really recommend all of Aletha Salter's books. So she has an amazing book called Tears and Tantrums, for example, The Aware Baby. I have a couple of books. One is called The Emotional Life of Babies, which really goes into this in depth, how to differentiate between a needs feeling and a healing feeling, how to differentiate between mild dissociation and true relaxation. These are really essential to aware parenting and is really what marks that difference with classical attachment parenting. And I talk in The Emotional Life of Babies about how, because classical attachment parenting really came back in the, let's say, the 70s, co-sleeping started to come in again. People in what we might call the West or the South were being influenced by other cultures. Baby carrying started to come back in a little bit, still very much on the fringe. Co-sleeping came in a little bit. Breastfeeding for longer term started to come in a little bit. It was still often seen as very fringe. So people really needed to fight for that. And I think what then often happened is that fight for that attachment style parenting often meant that when any talk of crying happened, that it was seen as being controlled crying or cry out or any method where a baby or child is left alone to cry, perceiving this is controlled crying, this is cry out, and it absolutely isn't. we're saying this is a completely different experience. This is where a baby is being held. This is where a baby is releasing stress and trauma. This is where a parent is having deeply nuanced observations of their baby or child, really differentiating from their behavior. Is this a needs feeling? Is this a healing feeling? Listening to those feelings and observing their baby or child afterwards and really seeing from those observations, this baby is calmer and more relaxed. They're making more relaxed eye contact. There's this beautiful presence that comes into the room. They're more relaxed when they sleep. They're more happier. They're molding into hugs more. They're more cuddly. They're more melty. They're smiling more. Their face looks more luminous. The toddlers are just happier. They're willing to cooperate more, not in a compliant way, but just a joyful way. You know, all these absolute clear observations that come. And again, if you're not familiar with my work, this is because of my own background in research, in observation. This is what I invite every parent to do, to be your own researcher, to not do what anyone else tells you to do, to listen in. Is what I'm reading, is this what I'm hearing resonate with me? If it does, to then experiment with these practices and then observe your baby or child. In that way, we each become the experimenter. We become the one who's seeing, yes, when I actually listen to their healing feelings in this way, look at all these wonderful things that happen. They sleep much more restfully, but they're more connected. I feel more connected with them. I'm feeling more relaxed. I'm feeling happier because I see them smiling more. I see them more relaxed in their muscles. I see that they're not sucking their thumb anymore. I see that they, you know, all of these things, which are clearly observable when we practice aware parenting. And that's what I really love about it and really invite you to do if this resonates with you, is to be an experimenter. So this confusion is really because of this different understanding, again, these different cultural beliefs or different beliefs about crying. And this different understanding leads to really different responses. So with classical attachment parenting, what we'd see from an aware parenting perspective, without any judgment and without any invitation for self-judgment, this means that there can often be activities that are actually suppressing healing feelings. So actually what is happening is the baby or child is trying to do this wonderful, incredible, innately wise thing of releasing stress and trauma from their bodies. And because that crying and raging or laughter and play is being perceived as an unmet need, the parents are moving in, doing things to stop the crying and raging, which appears to be meeting the need, but it's actually suppressing those feelings. And those feelings then stay in the body and accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. And as the feelings accumulate, we start seeing their effects more and more. So that might start off as they take longer and longer to go to sleep. They start wanting to feed more, even though their stomachs are getting bigger and can hold more milk. They start perhaps being more tense in their bodies. They start avoiding eye contact. They start being more restless in their sleep. As they get older, they might start being pinchy or bitey. They might start throwing and hitting. You know, all of these things are this clear evidence of this accumulation of feelings. So again, I invite you to reflect back. Is that something you have observed? Have you observed that accumulation of unexpressed healing feelings? And if you have, I invite you to put down the stick, to be really compassionate with yourself. You are always doing, as we all do, what we think is the most helpful and what we have the emotional capacity for in any moment to do with our children. So this is really an invitation, is does this different way of understanding crying resonate with you? Another thing we can often see is the effects of whatever we've done. So if we fed a baby every time they had feelings to express, or we jiggled or rocked them or bounced them, we might then see them starting to move a lot. So it might end up being a toddler who wants to move a lot, or a toddler who every time they are upset, they fall over, or they're in a new situation, or they're tired, which is when their feelings bubble up, they want to breastfeed. So it's really clearly seen. They learn how to respond to their healing feelings based on how we respond to them, which is why being compassionate with ourselves is so essential. So they might find it then harder to sit still, to concentrate, all of those things. The birdies love coming and singing about stuff like this with me. So with aware parenting, we're trusting a baby or child's innate body wisdom to move out of fight or flight or freeze. So moving out of either hyperarousal or dissociation into homeostasis. And the result of that is calm presence. It's really palpable, the calm presence that they feel. I've heard from thousands of parents over, is it 19 years now, I think, of being an aware parenting instructor, observing my own children hundreds of thousands of times, moving out of that agitation, having the big laughter and play or the big cry and rage, and coming out the other side, completing that whole cycle, completing that natural, innate, biological cycle, and moving into deep relaxation, deep presence. It's such a beautiful, exquisite experience. So hyperarousals, things like agitation, moving around, lashing out, hitting, dissociation. It's more like being numb, being still, having glazed eyes, relaxed presence. And I'm sure you've experienced it yourself. You know, maybe you've had a beach holiday. Maybe this was before becoming a parent and you had a beach holiday and you spent days just alternating between swimming in the warm sea, lying on the beach, dozing, chatting, connecting, reading a lovely book, whatever you like to do, going for lovely walks in nature, looking at the birds, I don't know, whatever your thing is. And that deep, deep quality of relaxation in our bodies, it's so exquisite. And to see and to support our babies and children to feel that in their bodies, I think is such a wondrous thing. That's really what aware parenting supports us to give to our children. And I want to offer is it's never too late. So however old your child is now, it's never too late to start practicing aware parenting. It's never too late to deeply trust babies and children and their innate body wisdom, not only in terms of crying and raging, but also in terms of learning, in terms of healing, in terms of attachment, in terms of the effects of secure attachment, all of these things. They are innately wise. And again, it's another thing I love about aware parenting, a deep, 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 deep trust in the innate wisdom of babies, children, and teens. So because of these different interpretations of crying between classical attachment parenting and aware parenting, there are then different parenting practices. So for example, with behavior, as I said, with aware parenting, we're looking at the reasons behind a child's behavior. And we know then how to respond if a child is hitting or biting or throwing at any of those things. And we know exactly how to respond, which is usually, so there's three reasons for challenging behavior in aware parenting. Information is the first, unmet needs is the second, and the third is unexpressed accumulated feelings. And this is often the case with things like hitting, biting and throwing and so on, as well as frequent night waking and a lack of cooperation. So we really understand how to move in any situation, what specifically is going on for a child, and how we can move in either with attachment play or to move in with loving limits, which is a term I created to name something that already existed in aware parenting, or listening to feelings. So if parents don't understand, so if they're practicing classical attachment parenting, they don't understand the healing function of crying and raging, children going to then have accumulated feelings and stress. And that is going to then show up in the sleep challenges, the hitting, the agitation, the not cooperating. Again, that can lead to the confusion. Why? If they've only been gentle and loving, why is their child hitting? And so then the belief might be, oh, it's just normal. It's a normal developmental stage for toddlers or children to hit or bite. From an aware parenting perspective, it isn't seen as a normal developmental stage, because if we listen to enough healing feelings, children don't do that. Or they do it less and less and less, depending on how many of their feelings we're able to listen to. So parents can often feel resentful in classical attachment parenting if they're doing all these apparent things to meet needs, and they're also stopping crying without realizing it. They're seeing that as needs feelings. I'm doing everything to meet my child's needs. Why are they so demanding? Why do I feel so stressed? Why am I so overwhelmed? So resentment and burnout can happen, and that can sometimes lead to power over when we're overwhelmed and stressed. If you are feeling resentful, burnt out and stressed right now, I am sending you so much love and compassion. It's so unenjoyable. And again, I would see this part of the cultural piece. We're not meant to parent in nuclear families. We are meant to live the most biologically healthy communities, interconnected humans who will support each other and particularly support parents and children. So when we really understand with aware parenting the source of the behavior issues, we know how to tend to it. It's like, even though that can still be hard, but really understanding what's going on can make every difference in the world and can really reduce the likelihood of resentment and burnout. So the third difference that's often seen between these two is the role of the mother. Often in classical attachment parenting, it really is seen as, because there isn't this understanding of healing crying, because then it's often the mother who breastfeeds a baby to go to sleep, or a toddler or a child to go to sleep, particularly with a baby, because there isn't this understanding of the difference between needs, feelings and healing feelings, and how long babies might actually go in between feeds. It often means it's harder for mothers then to have their own needs met. It can often lead to resentment and burnout. And again, this is one of the things I love about aware parenting, is that if there are two parents, it can really support everyone to get their needs met, because the father, or if you know the other parent, if it's not a father, can also support the baby, the toddler or the child to go to sleep. The mother can go out for periods of time or leave the baby for periods of time, and the baby can be securely attached with the other parent. And what often that means is then the mother is more able to get her needs met, has her cup more full. Often means the dad or the other parent has more confidence, has more then bonding with the baby or child. That can affect the whole family system so profoundly. And then the baby or child has their needs met more. They also often, so if it's a dad, for example, they then have this internalized belief of, men welcome my feelings. My dad loves me unconditionally. He's able to be with my biggest grief and my deepest rage. So it can be so helpful for all the family, and it is one of the most transformational things I've seen for so many families, and particularly in relation to really also understanding what's going on when perhaps a baby or toddler might always cry when they're with the dad. From an aware parenting perspective, we can often see that in a quite different perspective. So I talk a lot about that in the emotional life of babies, if you're interested. So what do people often notice as the effects when they move from classical attachment parenting to aware parenting? So often these can be the outcomes. Babies, toddlers and children sleep more restfully and calmly. There's often more connection between the mother and the toddler or the child when breastfeeding. And I haven't gone into detail why that is, but that's often because then the toddler is breastfeeding when they're feeling calm and relaxed, rather than to try and suppress feelings and be all agitated or a little bit numb and dissociated. So often brings actually more connection when breastfeeding. I've worked with so many mothers of toddlers who've then gone on to really enjoy breastfeeding even more. They've actually continued breastfeeding when they thought of giving up, because it becomes an opportunity for deep presence and connection. So again, it's such a yummy outcome, isn't it? Often tends to be less resentment as well. So actually more deep intimacy and connection with a child. People so often say to me, oh my gosh, I thought I was already really close and connected with my baby or child doing classical attachment parenting. But when I moved to aware parenting, that deepened even more. I didn't even know that was possible. I've heard that so many times. And so as I was saying, if there are two parents, it tends to be that everyone can get their needs more. It can really turn out much more enjoyable. There can be real clarity about understanding when to offer loving limits and why they're so important. If you're interested in loving limits, I did an episode on that quite recently, an update on it. And they do have also an offering, a loving limits deep dive, a little mini course if you would like to know more about loving limits. And one of the most wonderful things is children just calmer, happier, more present, more able to concentrate. Being around children who regularly get to express their big feelings, release stress and trauma from their bodies, return to homeostasis, calm, loving presence, are generally just a delight to be around. So actually just, it's a lot of work to listen to big feelings. It's a lot of work. It requires a lot of us. It requires a lot of our own inner work. That's another thing about aware parenting. Really is, we really, really need to do a lot of our own inner listening, because we grew up in this culture. Most of us didn't have any of our healing feelings listened to. Most of us were brought up with punishments and rewards. Many of us didn't experience attachment play. So often so much of the journey is actually freeing ourselves from our own conditioning, our own conditioned beliefs from living in this culture, and having our own feelings lovingly heard, and also the reparenting part. So dropping the guilt and shame sticks and the self-judgment sticks. So as I was saying, although it does require a lot more from us in some ways, less in other ways, aware parenting, the effects are so incredible. Even though every one of us is going to do it, myself absolutely included, with our own unhealed trauma, still elements of our own conditioning, places where we're stressed and respond in ways we don't want to. Even with all of that, the effects are really clear. The effects are so clear, and it just becomes so much more enjoyable to connect with these babies and then children and then teens and young adults and see them as amazing, gorgeous beings whom we can trust, who we can connect with, who actually are present and aware and are able to concentrate and think really clearly and be loving and gentle to others. It's the most wondrous, amazing, gorgeous, wonderful effects of aware parenting. So I would share a little tiny bit of my own experience, even though I totally resonated with aware parenting. I told you that whole long story way back, didn't I? The first 3 months with my own daughter, our own daughter, we did attachment style parenting, but I did not do any listening to healing feelings. And the reason was because I was carrying her 24/7, pretty much co-sleeping, just totally devoted to her, breastfeeding all the time, totally loved breastfeeding. I just did not understand aware parenting enough back then to know that even though I was doing all of those things, that she still had healing feelings to express. That every single baby, however much we aim to meet their needs, will still have healing feelings to express pretty much every day. I would say for about the first year. And so I was doing the exact thing that I'm sharing with you. We were bouncing on the Fitball. I was spending hours every night feeding her, but I just loved it. I would have been happy to keep doing that forever if I had not started seeing those effects of accumulation I was sharing with you. She started to just still really aware and present, but just not quite as aware and present, starting to maybe avoid a little bit of eye contact. And that's when I realized, aha, actually she does have healing feelings to express. And really that shift that happened at 3 months old, when her dad and I first listened to her healing feelings in our arms in the evening after I had been feeding her all evening. And when she came out the other side after about, I seem to remember it was about 30 to 45 minutes of a big cry, and she came out the other side and the whole quality of the room shifted. It was like this deep presence, and she just gazed into my eyes, and I was in awe. We were both in awe. Her dad was right there too. We were absolutely in awe and wonder to see how she was, having had this first opportunity to express her feelings, how clear and radiant she was, how deeply present she was. It was incredible. I will remember that forever, I think. That was more than 22 years ago. And if you want to hear more about that, he and I share that story back in the father, I think it's the father's number 2 episode, way back a couple of years ago now, I would say, at least, if not more. So that's a beautiful story. And of course, it's a huge thing. That was huge for me to go from that. I still had lots of feelings, my own feelings from my own infancy, even though I'd done 10 years of psychotherapy and was completely lived in the world of developmental psychology and observation. I trained in infant observation, and yet I still couldn't see what is so clear and obvious to me nowadays. I couldn't see the difference between relaxation and mild dissociation. This is the thing about the effects of our cultural beliefs, how we've been really trained to see things, and this is really an invitation to see things differently. So I absolutely needed support to have my own feelings heard, which I did after that first time. And as we then just continued to listen to her feelings every day after that, every evening, I really saw the shift in her. It was so profound. She's so incredibly present and aware, and still is, amazing young woman. And then my son, 4.5 years later, where we started listening to feelings right from the beginning. So I just love this approach. I'm so grateful to Aletha Salter. It's not only transformed my life, but just been the most wondrous thing. And as you can probably tell, I'm deeply passionate about sharing with as many other parents who also resonate with it, who also have this deep trust in human beings, who also see our innate body wisdom, who also see that there's nothing wrong with us, to, you know, really releasing so much of these cultural beliefs which lead to deep suffering and pain. So I wonder how you're feeling as you've heard this. This went in quite a different direction. I didn't think I was going to share so much about my own journey. I didn't think I was going to share so much about the cultural piece, but I really enjoyed it. I wonder how you're feeling. I'm sending you so much love. And if you are someone who's just starting to explore the possibility of aware parenting, I invite you to come and listen to some more episodes. If you're coming via sleep, there's the old sleep series, and there's a new one starting after this one. And that might be one of the places you might want to start. There was the whole series on the effects of birth. You might find that interesting too, and how babies heal from birth trauma, and children and adults. And as I say, I really recommend all of Aletha Salter's books. If you've got a baby, I'd recommend The Aware Baby. I also recommend mine as well. So The Emotional Life of Babies is my baby's book. And then in terms of children, with Aletha's, I'd probably recommend Tears and Tantrums first, and also Healing Your Traumatized Child. So amazing. Also Attach and Play. But they're all of her books are amazing. Cooperative and Connected, really about understanding a lot more other elements of aware parenting, not only the crying and raging part. And then she also has one called Raising Drug-Free Kids, which is from zero to young adulthood. And again, I really recommend that book. The title, some people might be off put by the title sometimes, and it's such an incredible book. I very much recommend it for all parents. And I also have my most recent book's called I'm Here and I'm Listening. So that is for parents of children from 2 to 8. And I'm editing one at the moment, as I said at the beginning, on sleep. And I've got another one coming on reparenting, which is a combination of aware parenting and the Marian method, which I'm really excited about. So I invite you to have a read of those. There's also aware parenting instructors all over the world. We have a free Facebook group, which you can find, where you can come along and ask questions. I really do recommend getting one-on-one support from an aware parenting instructor. So I do one-on-one mentoring, and there are so many incredible aware parenting instructors in Australia and New Zealand and all around the world, wherever you are. And many of them also have podcasts, so there are lots of other podcast episodes to listen to. I have lots of online courses, so do lots of the other aware parenting instructors too. So there's lots and lots to look at. So if you want to find out more about Aletha's books, you can find those at awareparenting.com. And if you want to find me on social media, I've got 3 Instagram accounts. For ease, would you like to come to the Aware Parenting podcast? That would probably be helpful. And on Facebook, I'm on Marian Rose. You can find me there. So I'm sending you lots of love. If you are practicing classical attachment parenting and you want to move shift over to aware parenting. I'm so welcome you here. If you've listened to this and you've gone, no, that doesn't resonate with me at all, I so support your no. Part of my Marian Method work is really supporting my mothers in particular, but all humans, to reclaim the beauty and the wisdom of their no's. I think it's so important for each of us to listen to ourselves. I really trust you and what resonates with you. And I'm sending you so much love and so looking forward to this sleep series. So I will see you next time if you're coming back. Okay, so much love to you.